Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store or Lowe's.com for more details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast. In this episode, we dive into the unsettling case of Jennifer Farber Dulos, who vanished on May 24, 2019. Amidst a divorce and custody battle, her estranged husband, Fotis Dulos, and his partner, Michelle Trokinis, became the center of a shocking conspiracy. Today, we bring you up to the moment coverage from the courtroom as Trokinis faces trial, accused of a role in this presumed murder.
The court's order is that there be no photos taken for which we can hear a click. That is not permitted. So if you can muffle the click, that would be in compliance with the order. Do we have to take up the argument on the motion to preclude presumptive blood testing at this point?
Yes, Your Honor. If I just have a moment to... It's my understanding that through this witness, the state is going to try to introduce at least three, perhaps four, because I went through this last night, photographs of the glow of either Luminol or Castlemeyer, which is shortened in some documents to KM, which is the reagent test, the presumptive test for blood. I had cited in my motion State versus Moody. I also cited the New Jersey appellate court case of State versus Pittman and the Arkansas case of Young versus State, which were subsequent to Moody, that all stand for the proposition that the presumptive test for blood, whether they use Luminol or they use the Castlemeyer product, is a some kind of an aerosol spray that reacts to different substances. One of the substances is blood. There's other fluids that do, but also certain kinds of cleansers do. Certain rust products do. There may be I saw one article that listed 30 things that react to it. Now, I'm not sure, other than what the state mentioned yesterday, the idea that it should come in just so that the state can explain why certain pictures were taken. We're about to see, I didn't count them all, but about 40 photographs that cover all of these same areas. We've already seen pictures of drops of blood, alleged blood, or blood-like stains from both the Suburban and from the garage. We also had the video that showed and there were zoom ins of the same thing, as well as the body camera showing something that was a blood-like stain. Now, State versus Moody addresses two issues, and the case that was mentioned yesterday, the Grant case, and there are a couple of other appellate court cases, there were two issues in Moody, and I want to make this clear because the state has kind of conflated the two issues. The first issue in Moody was whether or not a lay witness or anyone else, a police officer, could imply that something was looked like blood, and whether a lay opinion was appropriate in the absence of confirmatory testing. Both in Moody, there's another case called Whipple, State versus Whipple, where they discussed that, and then in Grant, they explained the difference between the findings in Moody and Whipple, and in the Grant case, where it wasn't about luminol, it wasn't about this presumptive blood testing, it was instead about whether a lay witness can say, looked like there was a pool of blood, the person was bloody, etc. And that was the issue in those later cases. I think I emphasized yesterday, I don't want to have to re-quote it, but the Supreme Court of Connecticut has specifically said that there is absolutely no probative value whatsoever in the presumptive testing. And therefore, the fact that they took some additional photographs, which we're going to have every inch of these vehicles being photographed anyway, because there's a presumptive test that glowed, is going to confuse the jury. And I'm going to explain, it's not just going to be about here. Later on, when they do the presumptive test of the glow, the luminol in the Tacoma, it wasn't blood at all. It's not human. It's not organic. So it's the only possible reaction of this jury is they're going to be thinking that somehow, aha, the fact that this turned, it glowed in the blue light, there must be more blood there. There's hard, as the court is well aware, there is not very much blood at all on either scene, either on the Suburban, which now the court has seen, or in the garage. So the danger here is the prejudice is the jury's going to think, oh, well, there's more because this spray makes it look like there was even more that we're not picking up. But in both cases, as far as I know, when they tested it, when they went to the lab, it was not blood. But when we get back to the issue at hand, since it has no probative value under Moody, and the issue has to do with whether or not it's going to either be confusing or in some way prejudicial, if they're going to try and introduce it, then I insist that we have a Porter hearing, because if the court, I thought it's already been decided that it has no value, and a lab person down the road may testify to that, but in light of your ruling from yesterday, if the state doesn't ask a subject matter, I don't get to cross-examine about it, and then only if I decide to put on a case in the defense case would it even come out. And so, you know, in following the court's rulings and the way the court wishes to proceed, we're talking about three or four pictures today through Detective Riley, or I don't know if he's now a sergeant, but he was a detective at the time, and asking in the question why he took certain pictures, which I submit is irrelevant since they took pictures of everything and documented everything. So in light of the decision in Moody and in the case of State versus Whipple, where there's such a strong view by the Connecticut Supreme Court that has no probative value, and they use the word whatsoever, that it will only lead to prejudice. And I submit that the argument that, well, they can distinguish Moody, not on this issue. There is not a single case that I could find anywhere that said that it had probative value at all. That is, we're talking about this reagent spray test, had any probative value whatsoever. But there's a lot of not only danger or prejudice, but confusion. What's the jury going to think? What's the court going to instruct the jury? That it has no value and we're only putting it in because that's where the officer wanted to take pictures? There's like 40 pictures we're about to see from Detective Riley. The whole car, the three pictures that where they use the blue light to do that, or the black light rather, and it looks blue in the photographs. There's no explanation for it. There's no legitimate basis for it. So on those basis, I ask the court to preclude, again, we're talking about three or maybe four pictures out of 40 which are going in, I could also argue cumulative, but we don't even get to that in light of the fact that there's just such danger with this particular misunderstanding and misapprehension for what's essentially junk science. There are a lot of things they could, I'll give you one last example and I'll sit down. There could be a situation where a police officer conducts a polygraph test and said, yes, polygraphs are not admissible, but based on what was said, I then went and did X. But of course, the Supreme Court has said you can't bring in polygraph for any reason because it's not reliable and has no probative value. So to use that as the reason for conduct by a police officer in this case would certainly be more prejudicial than probative. And it's also not necessary for the state's case to prove their case. I just have 1 minute. I've also been reminded that in Moody, the court talked about how that particular piece of evidence had an impact on the jury, and that's why the Supreme Court was so adamant that it's not admissible because it has no validity in either science or in the law. Thank you.
So first, Attorney Schoenhorn, the court wants to understand what the nature of the testimony may be from this next witness. So this next witness took photographs, is that correct?
No. That is not correct, Your Honor. If I may interject, the next witness didn't take any photographs. The next witness is the evidence officer who determined which items in the garage to seize as exhibits and or document as evidence. He authored an evidence report or exhibit report, which indicates every item that is documented on Sergeant Pearson's map. He is the individual who made that decision in connection with Lieutenant Colonel Davidson to examine those items. He also, if you look at the exhibit report, did KM testing on around 30 of those exhibits, Your Honor, some of which, about four of them, came back negative. He documented that as well. There are about three or four photographs the state intends to introduce as well with respect to the luminol that was done on the car that counsel is referring to, but it's not by itself. What this detective is testifying to. He's testifying to the content of the photographs, not taking them. So just to be very clear on that.
Well, what is his testimony expected to be?
His testimony is going to walk through the garage, identify the items that were seized as exhibits in 69 Wells itself in the house.
So let the court interject here. His testimony is going to be what items were seized that were of evidentiary value, correct?
And what he did when he processed the scene, yes.
Let's just talk about what he decided to seize.
Yes, Your Honor.
So his testimony is going to be he decided to seize what?
With respect to
this
presumptive test. Yes, Your Honor. He worked in connection with Lieutenant Colonel Davidson with respect to the blood pattern analysis that was done. He seized various swabbings of various blood spatter that was found, including some of the exhibits. He tested them using the KM test. He then swabbed them, the process of swabbing them and logging them as exhibits in this case.
So, the court has to ask this question. What he did was swab those areas of that vehicle or garage floor, correct?
He swabbed those areas and he performed the KM test. And then they were subsequently sent to the lab. He is part of that chain in command. That is the nature of the testimony presented, Your Honor, with respect to the presumptive test.
So he is going to be asked, the court assumes, that he did not take the photographs, correct? Because Attorney Pearson did not take the photographs.
She did not, and the state did not offer them as a photographer. I offered them as a representation of what the map was. And
the only way, counsel, that the jury knows what was or what the garage floor looked like was through photographs.
Yes.
The only way that your next witness can testify about what he swabbed is because we saw the photographs.
Those, and there are more photographs that the state intends to introduce. He will testify to each one if necessary. If counsel doesn't is objecting to those photographs coming in, then I will lay a foundation for each and every one utilizing the screen and asking him if that is a fair and accurate representation of what he observed that day and what he sees as evidence. I have no problem doing that, Your Honor. I did not do that, by the way, with Sergeant Pearson, just for the court, because counsel did not have any objection to the photographs coming in to save time. But I will, if that is what is needed.
Well, the testimony is going to have to reach the point where he says he swabbed this area because.
Yes.
And that's where this issue arises, correct?
If I may just clarify and actually bounce off what counsel said, what we discussed yesterday, and I believe the court order ruled an issue on, is the fact that the police officer can testify, or even lay witness can testify, that something appears to be blood-like. That would be the start of the testimony. Then I believe Detective Riley will testify as to, once he determined that it was blood-like, what his next steps were, either to swab it or test it for utilizing the KM test. So it's a link in the chain after. So just to keep those two issues separate.
Well, just to phrase it colloquially, he's going to testify, it looked like blood to me.
Yes.
Next, he's going to indicate that it was swabbed because it looked like blood to him.
Yes.
And also he performed a presumptive test, correct?
Yes, but just to qualify that, Your Honor, I don't believe that the only reason it was further swabbed and further steps were taken was simply because of the look of the item. It was the entire concept or the facts of the case, including the fact that we have Jennifer Dulos is a missing mother of five who dropped her kids off from school and never returned home, including the fact that it all happened in her home. The blood was positioned in one location and made it more likely that it was blood. There were numerous factors going into his decision. So it is a little more nuanced than that.
Well, counsel has indicated that there are a number of grounds on which he believes that a lay witness should not testify concerning the presumptive test. Now, what counsel laid out, and the court is just indicating what it understands from the argument. First, it may confuse the jury. Second, is that it was prejudicial. Well, the issue is not whether it's prejudicial, it's whether it's unfairly prejudicial. So what the court is going to do is review State versus Moody and any related cases. And we have to take a recess for that.
And if I may, Your Honor, I would ask the court to review State v. Grant, which is 286 Con 499.
286 Con 499?
Yes, sir. It's a 2008 case, as well as State v. Downing. Downing, D-O-W-N-I-N-G, 68, CONAP 388, 2002.
The citation again, please.
68, CONAP 388, 2002 case. And of course, the state would always refer, yesterday I referred to State v. Schaefer, which is that 1975, 168, CON 309. So I would ask the court to review those. And then after, at some point, the state would like to be heard on the motion, on the legal analysis side of it. I would just ask the court for that time when the court is ready.
One other matter that we don't have to talk about this second, but what I just heard Attorney Manning say is that They're also going to suggest that the reason certain pictures were taken because of all this hearsay that he heard. So they're going to do a narrative about what they think their theory is, which again is not necessary. This is the evidence technician who gathered evidence. I was also under the impression, based on what was said, that they took photographs at the same time. But if they didn't, I'm not going to object to the other photographs coming in through this witness. They obviously, whoever took them, and there are multiple detectives who took photographs at various points. I'm not going to require the author of those photographs, because any witness can say, is this fair and accurately represent what it looked like when you're in there? So I'm indicating that for the record. However, asking to explain why he took certain photographs so he can get into multiple narratives about the hearsay about the case, when all he needs to say is, I went in there, I had information, and I took photographs. What he heard about the case is not relevant to his actions. And it would also involve the confrontation, my right to confront and cross-examine, about whatever he was told, whether it was accurate or inaccurate, where this witness won't be able to say. And I just think it'll take us on a little detour, unnecessary detour, through allegations that were, you know, being made in the media and from other individuals. So I just note that may be part of what's going to be heard. I just don't know.
Can I just clarify again? This witness did not take the photographs. Counsel keeps reiterating about why photographs were taken. It's not the state's intention to offer testimony that Detective Riley ordered those photographs taken because the photographer meant to take that specific photograph. It's the actual exhibit seized.
Fair enough. I will amend my remarks. The fact that he took certain swabs does not depend upon the nature of the investigation in terms of what he had heard about what had happened in the days before he got there. He was assigned to take certain, it looks the way it looked, he took certain swabs, and then it went to the lab. I have no objection to any of that. It's this prejudicial notion that we have to get into either hearsay or worse, junk science as a basis, which the Supreme Court has said easily confuses the jury, especially since we won't be hearing from the lab until at least a week from now, as far as I know.
If I can, Your Honor, just clarify a few things here. And again, I would like to be heard on the law. So prior, so before we get back into cases, but just for just to make sure that the record is very clear, that the detective with his training experience is going to testify, and this is the offer of proof, about why he took a swab. It's not just because of the color. Otherwise, we'd be taking ketchup stains everywhere. It is because of his training and experience and his interpretation as the evidence officer. He has a right to that testimony. With respect to the law, I will reserve my argument for when Your Honor deems fit.
Thank you. Well, it is clear that the evidence officer was summoned to 69 Wells Lane because there was a missing persons report. So one could claim, well, that's hearsay.
I'm not objecting to that, Your Honor.
Thank you. This is going to take some time for the court to review these cases. So, of course, the court would allow the jury to go into a recess at this point anyway. But we're probably not going to come back until 12:15. Stand in the recess until 12:15.
All rise. This honorable Supreme Court now stands in recess until 12:15.
It's helpful to first determine who testified about what they believed to be blood. Here, they were percipient witnesses. Several witnesses that had been on scene and observed certain substances and stains at the crime scene. The testimony by those witnesses was to be that what they observed was blood. Now, the defendant moved for an in limine preclusion of that testimony by any lay witness or percipient witness, on-scene witness, unless there was sufficient evidence to establish that that item or those items had been tested and found to be blood. So in Grant, the state, or rather the court, cited State versus Schaefer, finding that it was permissible to admit into evidence the opinions and common observers, or rather of common observers, in regard to common appearances, facts, and conditions. However, that testimony could not have been based on the testimony of others or some hypothetical set of facts. So the holding, as the court sees the holding in that case, is that even lay witnesses can testify as to their belief that a substance was blood, as long as that testimony is not based on what the court described as testimony of others, or hypothetical statements of facts. Now, of course, in Moody, that was a situation in which expert testimony was offered. The expert witness said that a stain found on one of the defendant's shoes had given a positive result on a presumptive test for blood. In Moody, there was a presumptive test only. The court held that the result of the presumptive test for blood had no probative value whatsoever. The test result did nothing toward establishing the likelihood of the presence of human blood. In that case, there was only the presumptive test. That testimony should have been excluded and should have been found inadmissible. Now, in State versus Whipper, there was no testing at all by the police detectives. The detectives had testified that an eyewitness had seen the defendant break a vase over the victim's head. The police concluded in their testimony that the bloody hand or palm print on that vase was actually blood. An expert then testified at the same trial, and he stated that the bloody palm print on the vase was the defendant's, but he said on cross-examination that the substance on the vase had reacted to certain chemical reagents consistently with the way blood would react, but there were other substances that would have the same reaction. Well, because the police did not test the blood, the fingerprint expert did not test for blood, the court concluded that it was improper for the state's witnesses to testify that the palm print found on the vase had been made in blood. In Grant, that was again a percipient witness testimony. They observed what they believed to be blood and described as a trail of blood. This is another case in which you have lay people testifying about what they believe to be the substance. The court held there a person of ordinary knowledge and experience is generally competent to testify that a substance personally observed by that person appeared to be blood. Although the particular facts and circumstances surrounding the witness's observation of the substance might affect the weight to be given to the testimony, the fact that the substance was not subject to scientific testing to rule out any possibility that it was not blood does not render the testimony inadmissible. So now we come to Downing. In Downing, we had a criminologist testify, opining on the stand that they relied on a presumptive test for blood. The defendant argue that that testimony should have been precluded pursuant to Moody. In Downing, the court should say this first. This issue really comes down to what is probative. And to make it simple, is a presumptive test by itself probative? According to Moody, no, it is not probative. On that basis, it would not be admitted. The next question is a presumptive test under all circumstances not probative? The answer to that is no. In Downing, the court quotes Moody, the presumptive test for blood had no probative value whatsoever because the test did nothing toward establishing the likelihood of the presence of human blood. We're talking there about a situation in which there was no other factor to be considered. However, in Downing, the court indicated that the presumptive test, again, by itself, is not going to be probative in any degree. However, there are other factors that can be considered that would render it probative, not conclusive, but probative, such as the color of the substance, the shape of the substance, other factors that could indicate that the presumptive test could be confirmed. Now, in this case, we have a presumptive test or presumptive tests. The issue then becomes, are there other factors that can render the presumptive test not conclusive, but probative? Because relevant evidence has this definition. It's evidence that has any tendency to make a fact, the existence of a fact that is material to the determination of the matter more probable or less probable than it would be without the evidence. So in this case, you have a presumptive test by itself, not good enough, but you also have a missing person investigation. You have the color and shape of unidentified stains. You have spatter pattern. You have unidentified stains on the vehicle, in the garage, and you have an abandoned vehicle owned by Jennifer Dulos. In combination, the presumptive test is probative. The issue now goes to what weight the jury will give to the evidence. So the only danger the state can run into is if there's a question asked and the defense, rather the state's witness, says that presumptive test is conclusive. And remember, the court can also ask questions. So the court is going to allow the testimony concerning the presumptive test. But again, the court has informed the jury that this court will ask questions.
Just for the record, I would note that in Downing, the expert evidence showed that some of the splatter had already been tested and confirmed at the lab to be blood, not just that it looked like blood, and that's why it was allowed. But the court, I would ask the court to address the second part of my argument, that its probative value is completely outweighed by its prejudice, especially in light of the fact there is no confirmatory tests, and that when it is tested, it is not blood. So to let it in is the equivalent of allowing, as I indicated, that rust that the jury can infer that that was blood. So I ask the court to at least address the other part of my argument.
Well, the issue again is not prejudice, but unfair prejudice.
Yes.
The state wish to be heard.
Your Honor, with respect to the fact that a test is all evidence is going to be prejudicial, to rise to the level of unfair prejudice, prejudice at this point. I don't think evidence of a presumptive test when the witness is going to testify that it is presumptive in its very nature. It's also subject to a very competent counsel who can cross-examine him about the adequacy of that test and about the fact that a lot of this evidence did make it along the chain and go to the lab and what they did there, whether they tested it or not. I'm not gonna even address any of that today. I believe Attorney McGinnis will deal with that next week. But with respect to the prejudicial value, I don't think it rises to unfair prejudice, and counsel can cross-examine, and that will go before the jury.
Well, again, the only danger the court sees for the state is if the state's own witness says it's conclusive.
I understand that, Your Honor.
As far as unfair prejudice is concerned, the court does not see that the prejudice is so substantial as to preclude any effective cross-examination. So the court will allow testimony concerning the presumptive test. We can bring the jury in. Counsel stipulate to the presence of all of the jurors.
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, may I call my next witness?
Yes.
The state calls Detective Riley, Matthew Riley, to the stand. May I approach the clerk?
Yes.
Your Honor.
Okay, Madam Clerk, the witness.
You can please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or solemnly and sincerely affirm, as the case may be, that the evidence you shall give concerning this case shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or upon penalty of perjury?
I do.
Please state your name and spell it for the record.
It's Matthew Riley, R-E-I-L-L-Y.
And you may be seated.
Thank you.
You may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Fine, ma'am.
Mr. Riley, or Detective Riley, I'm sorry, are you currently employed by the state police?
No, I'm not. I retired from the Connecticut State Police in January of 22.
Okay. If you could please explain, what rank did you retire
at? I retired as a sergeant.
And in 2019, what rank did you have?
I was a detective.
Could you briefly just explain a little bit about your training and experience as a sergeant with the Connecticut State Police?
Yes, I've been a detective for approximately 20 years of my 23-year career. And during that time, I've had classes in intermediate crime scene processing, advanced crime scene processing, latent print development, bloodstain pattern analysis, death investigation, homicide investigation, and probably a myriad of other classes.
And with respect to the Connecticut State Police, were you assigned to a particular troop or division?
I was assigned to the Western District Major Crime Squad, where I worked on the van unit as a crime scene investigator.
Could you please explain what a crime scene investigator is?
So a crime scene investigator is tasked with the investigation of a crime scene, processing evidence, handling evidence, packaging evidence, and coordinating with laboratory analysis and such things as that.
Could you discuss a little bit about your training, if you have any, with respect to crime scene analysis, that particular part of being, or that assignment, I should say?
Yes, I've attended intermediate crime scene processing courses, advanced crime scene processing courses, law enforcement photography, bloodstain pattern analysis, different trainings on the investigation of not only homicide scenes, but scenes of sexual assault, and classes on medical legal death investigation.
And how long were you assigned to the van?
Approximately 14 years.
In 2019, who was assigned to the van with you?
So the van unit in 2019 was supervised by Sergeant Joe Duva. And then there was myself, Detective Jamie Pearson, Detective Jeremy Combs, Detective Frank McGavin, and Detective Mike Downs.
I'm going to draw your attention specifically now to May 24th, 2019. Did you report to 69 Wells Lane that day in New Canaan?
I did.
Why did you respond there?
I received a telephone call from the Western District Commander saying that the New Canaan Police Department was requesting assistance with a missing person investigation where they suspected foul play.
And what was your assignment for going to, or what was your reason for going to 69 Wells?
They were specifically, what I understood at the time, they were just asking for crime van assistance or crime scene investigation assistance. So I responded to Western District Headquarters in Litchfield, grabbed the truck, and drove down to 69 Wells in New Canaan.
So the truck, what is on the truck, if you can describe it a little bit?
So it's the major crime van is a, it's kind of a big toolbox on wheels. So it's a small body or kind of a medium duty truck with a cargo body on the back that contains all of our equipment, all of our supplies, additional lighting, cameras, such things as that.
About what time did you respond there? Or to 69 Wells, I should say.
I probably arrived sometime around 2 o'clock in the morning. On the 25th.
Was anybody on scene when you arrived?
Well, I know New Canaan Police Department had uniformed officers there, and then I really don't remember who arrived first from our crew.
Now, you mentioned a couple names about people who worked on the van. Did anybody that you named arrive or come to 69 Wells that day?
Yes, Detective Frank McGavin was available, so he responded. And then we had several what we call alternates. So detectives who also work in Western District Major Crime, they have additional crime scene training and experience, and they come to kind of backfill absences for people who are not able to respond.
And who were those alternates?
The alternates that day were Detective Corey Clabby, Detective Bob Hazen, Detective Katie Keppel, and Detective Dwayne Lopier.
Did you enter the house on it? Well, I'm gonna, if I can check that. Is there a, when you conduct a search of a residence, is there a certain process or procedure that you utilize?
Yes. So when we arrive at a scene, usually in serious cases, the local PD is obtaining, in the process of obtaining a search warrant. By the time we arrive on scene, we get a briefing as to the investigation up to that point. Usually from the lead.
You know, I'm going to object. This is not a, or the question is not what he did then. He's talking about in general. I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, the question is what was the procedure on that date, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I would request that.
The response was generally this is what we do. That's non-responsive. So the objection is.
I will rephrase. Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, with respect to May 24th, 2009, actually it would be May 25th, 2019, did you have a specific procedure in place with the other officers on the van in conducting a search of 69 Wells?
Yes. So, like I said, I arrived at approximately 2 o'clock in the morning. Again, New Canaan was obtaining a search warrant for the property, and as once everybody arrived, we divvied up our various assignments of what we were going to do that night.
What were those assignments?
So Frank McGavin, he was assigned to take notes at the scene and prepare a scene report. Basically, it's observations and actions at the scene. I took evidence collection, so I was the evidence officer. It was my responsibility to identify, collect, package, and label all the evidence. We had a primary photographer. We also run a backup photographer. We have a videographer. And then we had somebody prepare a sketch map.
Who was your primary photographer?
That would be Detective Katie Keppel.
And the backup photographer?
Detective Bob Hazen.
And is there a particular order that those assignments are done in the course of May 25th, 2019 processing?
That night, we started out with video recording, overall video recording of the scene. Then we'll start primary and backup photography overall. I'm sorry, let me back up. The first thing we do is we conduct a walkthrough. So we conduct a walkthrough, kind of see what we have, identify any kind of fragile or transient evidence that we have.
Again, I'm going to object. It sounds like he's not talking about what he did, but what he usually does.
The objection essentially is non-responsive. The question is not what normally the routine is, it is what happened that day, sustained.
Detective Riley, did you participate in the walkthrough of 69 Wells?
Yes, I did.
How did you enter the house?
I entered through the garage, and then I went ahead and accessed the front door because the garage appeared to have a great deal of evidence in it. We didn't want to get it trampled. So I opened the front door, let Detective McGavin and Detective Keppel in. We conducted a quick walkthrough.
And if I can, what is the purpose of that walkthrough?
We were looking for kind of the layout of the house, the situation, getting a feel for what we had. We were looking for any kind of transit evidence, fragile evidence, and we would start to develop a plan on how we would basically tackle this problem.
And after the walkthrough, what was the next step in processing the scene?
The next step in processing the scene is Corey Clabby started his video recording.
Were you a part of that?
No, I was not.
And after the video recording?
After that, the photographers went through, primary and backup.
Were you a part of the primary or backup photography?
No.
While the videography or the primary and backup photographers are in the house, what were you doing?
While they were in the house, I was swabbing the points of entry door handles for latent DNA.
I just want to clarify and ask you about the word swabbing. What exactly do you mean by swabbing?
A swab is just a long-handled Q-tip that's contained in sterile packaging, and we use it for the collection of evidence.
Where do you get the swabs from?
Forensic supply house.
And how are they preserved, or are they preserved, I should ask you?
The swabs are contained in, they're individually packaged in sterile sterile wrappers. When we use them, we collect evidence, and then we place them inside of a short box that we seal and put inside of a larger envelope for labeling.
What do they look like?
The swabs, ma'am?
Yes.
Like I say, it's a long-handled Q-tip, similar to what you see at a doctor's office.
And you indicated, well, how do you use them?
So in this case, when I was swabbing the door handles for DNA, I would open up two swabs, moisten them with sterile water, and then run them around the door handles in an effort to collect up any biologic material that may have been on that door handle. I'll then cap the swabs, put them inside of a box, seal them up, and then place them in an envelope.
And is that standard policy and procedure for you to, when you utilize a swab?
Yes.
And did you consistently use that process anytime you used a swab at 69 Wells?
Yes.
Now, you indicated you swabbed the doors, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Why would you swab the doors first?
Just in case there was an unknown intruder coming through one of those points of entry. Hopefully we would be able to pick up some sort of suspect DNA, unknown DNA.
Well, the court is going to interject here. The court believed the testimony was that he swabbed the door handles.
I was just going to clarify that if I can, Your Honor. If I may approach, Your Honor, the state is intending to introduce multiple photographs. I believe I need to have the witness view them for ID at this point, if I may.
May I have a word with counsel privately for a moment, Your Honor?
There's more to come at the Michelle Troconis trial in the Jennifer Farber Dulos case. The mystery deepens and justice seeks its course. Press subscribe now and stay tuned for more episodes unraveling the truths behind the most perplexing criminal cases from true crime today.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.